WICN in Worcester, this is the Venture Forum, tales of entrepreneurship from central Massachusetts. I'm your host, Mark Reed Edwards, Executive Director of the Venture Forum. Now let's start today's tale. On this episode of the Venture Forum, we've got a little change of pace. This week's guest is Elizabeth Jefferis, Executive Director of Baypath Humane Society of Hopkinton. It's one of those organizations that makes this area a great place to live. Liz started volunteering at Baypath in 2010. In 2011, she began working at the shelter as an assistant manager and was promoted to Executive Director in 2014. Liz oversees the operation of the shelter, and as a board member, she also works with her fellow board and committee members on development initiatives and strategic planning. Liz has two cats, a very vocal African gray parrot, and four dogs, including the infamous foster fail pigeon, aka Pidgey Widgey Woo Woo. And I understand she has a snoring dog on her lap right now. Elizabeth, it is great to have you on the Venture Forum.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. It's great to be here.
I shared a bit about your career path, but can you tell us more about what led you to Baypath?
Yeah, thanks. I have always loved animals. I started at a very young age nagging my parents for pets. And always loved them. But I did, you know, I'm from the area. I graduated high school and I went off to college and studied economics because I liked business too.
Yeah.
Oddly. But so I did take that track for a bit. I worked in financial services. I worked for State Street for a bit and then like for a bond fund. And I was always volunteering with the shelter. I actually lived in Florida and Colorado at different times and was always volunteering at a shelter wherever I was. And then when I ended up back here, I volunteered at Baypath and got the opportunity to, I actually held off volunteering because once I volunteer, I become obsessed. Like I can't miss a shift. I won't like go away. I won't do anything because I got to be at my shift. And I know like it takes hold. So I waited till I knew I could dedicate myself again, and then an opportunity to work there presented itself, and I was fortunate to be in a position to take that leap to do something I was more passionate about than, you know, people's IRAs. So,
so you shared a story that is kind of familiar to me and to the listeners of this show of people who leave this area and come back. So what makes this area, what makes central Massachusetts special for you?
Oh, I love it. I grew up in Northborough and went to high school and college in Massachusetts, but ended up in Florida. I actually lived in Florida twice, Fort Lauderdale and then Naples, because what 20-something-year-old doesn't head down to Naples? But then I ended up in Colorado. I Florida is beautiful, but very different. Southern Florida is very, you know, transient, not really that historical feel. It's hard to do Halloween like with palm trees and felt a little off. And even Denver, I thought I'd always love that vibe of Denver, but I was surprised like in the drive out, like, you know, driving through Kansas and how, you know, even all the way to Denver, because you finally see the Rockies, but then you stop and then you're in Denver. So you do have that beautiful mountain area, but like, it's so vast and open. I missed like the seasons and the coziness, if that, you know, quaintness of New England. And there are people out there, Mark, who have never seen the ocean. And I'm just like, what? Never seen the ocean. So it just, you know, it's home, you know, my family is here and sports teams, great schools, education, health. It's a great place to be, you know?
Well, it's good to have you here. So can you tell me more about Baypath, its history, its mission?
Yeah, definitely. So it was started started as Hopkinton Humane Society, started in 1977. And at that time, we don't see stray animals around here. Like it's really odd if you see a dog running loose, you know, someone's going to grab it in 30 seconds and get it to animal control. But back then, there were stray animals, you know, there wasn't the internet, there wasn't microchips. But at the time, the animal control officer, dog officer, whatever you call it, would hold the dogs and cats for like, I don't even think they pick up cats, honestly, but the dogs for, I think it was 2 to 3 days. And then I have old articles to this effect, but they were then selling the dogs to, I believe it was Harvard, for research. So they were selling the animals to be tested on. Women, largely women, got together and created like a loose, you know, foster network kind of thing to stuff these dogs in people's homes while they were trying to find their owners or start adopting them out. They then got two different trailers. One was over by Ashland that housed the cats, and then one was on this piece of property on the other side of town on Fruit Street in Hopkinton, where they would keep the dogs. I've seen old video of it, and it's crazy they were like, they'd be outside at night and they'd cover them with tarps in these kennels and stuff. But, you know, this was 40 years ago, like when dogs, you know, we treat our animals a lot different than that back then. And they were doing the best they could. And then they got the building in 1987 in Hopkinton. Around 1990, they changed it to Bay Path Humane because they were serving surrounding communities. Of course, in the 2000s, all the Southern transport started. And, you know, today we do adoption. We do roughly 800 cats and dogs a year. We have an outreach program. We have a spay-neuter initiative with the local VCA. We have this Bay Path Educates program, which is about going out. Since our building is so small, we can't engage kids the way we'd like to. So we'll go out to schools or with youth groups or local churches and bring an animal and teach kids about safe animal handling and stuff like that. We have a lecture series to get people access to, you know, great trainers or great medical professionals, animal, you know, veterinarians and specialists, pet CPR, stuff like that. So we try to, beyond adoption, engage our community in various other ways.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about adopting a pet? It seems like a logical thing to do, but what do you think people just don't understand about it?
I think it's a great question. I think people who don't consider adoption, yeah, there's that old thing, you know, that, you know, they're, something's wrong with them if they're at the shelter, you know, something like that, which, you know, oh my God, some of these animals we come across, even local, I mean, in some of these local towns, like purebred dogs being dumped and just great mixed dogs, whatever. But it's just, you never know what people are going through in life, and people end up having to give up really good animals. So there's that. In terms of the people that do adopt, and there's a lot of them, there's like another misconception once you consider adoption, and that is that, and people are open to it when we talk about it, but this is not the dog, you know, meeting a dog in a pen at Bay Path. This is not a dog at a dog park. This is not a dog at doggy daycare. These dogs have like measurable elevated stress hormone levels, cortisol, just like humans. These are companion animals living in a, not, you know, a home setting, which is what, you know, so they need time. They need, you know, and it's where, you know, I always call, I say I'm like the wet blanket of adoption, because I'm like, this is going to be great, but you have to give them the time to adjust. They don't put them in situations to make too many decisions. They're doing the best they can and they're coping, but they're stressed and they need that time to just settle in, you know. And people, once you talk about it, people get it. And I always joke, like, don't have a rave tonight, and, you know, don't introduce the dog to everyone you ever met, or the cat, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, people are great. They get it. They're like, oh yeah, I never thought about it, you know, like that. But people are so open to adoption around here. We generally don't hear those stereotypes you sometimes hear.
Sometimes a dog just needs attention and exercise.
Yeah. Or, you know, and even we say, like, you know, anyone who's like, oh, I'm going to walk the dog six times a day. Like, no, you're not. And that's okay. The dog doesn't need to be walked six times a day. They need stimulation. And that can be, you know, a food puzzle or a little training session, like a 5-minute training session, or playtime with another dog. Like, you don't just have to hike out Washington every day, you know, with your dog. And so, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, we've had a couple of Portuguese water dogs. The first one we got was, had been returned to the breeder at age 6, which breaks your heart just thinking about that, right?
Yeah.
And so he was a second chance dog, and he had some behavior issues, but all he wanted was some attention and exercise, and he was a great dog. And that's what it takes. It takes some patience,
yes,
understanding that they're living beings kind of like us who need attention and caring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen just so many dogs with the, and cats, I keep saying dogs, but same thing with cats. Like, it's so much of the time it's environment. And that's not to say that the people before, the family before is horrible, but just the wrong environment, too many moving pieces, not enough attention, or whatever, the structure, the environment just wasn't the right one. And you put them in the right one, and they thrive, you know.
I think about the, you know, in the White House now, there are a couple of dogs and one of them bit someone a couple of times. And I feel bad for the dog because the dog has been introduced to a strange environment where people are probably coming and going all the time. And it's not a calm place for a dog. So you've got to think about that wherever you put your dog, put them in a position where they're not going to kind of be startled all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. You got to advocate for your dog, whether it's at the White House or even at the dog park. And the other thing that, you know, dogs and cats, they give off so much body language that people just don't see. Like people always say, oh, the tail's wagging, like a tail wag doesn't mean happy always. Like how high is it? How fast is it moving? You know? And when the dog is, you know, when we do dog meets, I point out to people just so they can see, you know, the dog's telling us that it's aroused, it's yawning, it's licking its lips, it's shaking off when it's not wet, like all stress signals. Doesn't always mean bad, but just means like, hey, this is a little stressful and just, you know, I'm telling you this. And my tail's tucked so far under my legs here, it's coming up under my chin. I'm not in a good place. Can you help me out? You know, and when we slow down a minute and watch, it's amazing to see what, and our dogs watch, and our animals watch our body movements and what we're doing too. Like they watch us like a hawk. That's amazing.
It is interesting. You know, we think so much about people's facial expressions and their demeanor, and animals have the same cues.
Absolutely.
So how do you spread the word about your organization other than coming on shows like this?
Yeah, no, and this kind of stuff is huge. So thank you again for that. You know, for us, you know, obviously, people are looking for animals, right? So they'll see us on Pet Finder or they'll do a search and, you know, looking for local shelters. But, you know, Facebook is a big one for us. We have a great volunteer who's always, you know, sharing success stories and helpful articles. And it's not, you know, you can't just be like, adopt this, donate this. You know, we're trying to keep people engaged and help them, whether they've adopted from us or not. So I think we do a good job at that. You know, and a lot of, you know, the Twitter, Instagram, all those things. I'm not that great with social media, but I definitely appreciate its power. We actually had a really nice article in the Boston Globe this Sunday, which we don't get featured, you know, we've featured in here and there throughout the years, but that's great PR. I got a lot of emails from people like, I saw you in the Globe. So try to get into the local newspapers and stuff like that. But it's not hard. You know, there's a lot of people looking for you to begin with, you know, because they're looking for animals.
And what are your greatest needs other than money? We all need money, right? So if someone, you know, do you need dog food? Do you need things, you know, toys, beds? What are your biggest needs?
Yeah, we always, you know, we run through supplies so fast and people are always great responding to our needs. You know, we always have a running wish list on the website, but it's, you know, it's stuff like sheets and bedding, like people's stuff that they're looking to churn out, you know, dog treats. And we have like food that we always, you know, the dry food that they always get, so that their stomachs are good and stuff like that. But toys, definitely. And we always, right now our volunteer program is jammed up because of the pandemic and not being able to do the orientations properly, but hope to open that soon enough. Always looking for people who want to volunteer, and fosters too. Fostering is a huge part of our, and that's what the Boston Globe article was about, the, you know, the value of fostering. It allows you to like double your impact, you know.
How does fostering work?
Yeah, it's a great thing. You know, we have a probably like 50 or so cat and kitten foster homes and probably about 20 to 25 dog and puppy fosters. And, you know, depending on people's lifestyles, you know, if people have a lot going on and a couple dogs, couple cats, couple kids, you know, they'd be great. They're great puppy socializers or kitten socializers because they're young and they need to get exposed to all that, like a great kind of dynamic environment. Then, you know, we have dogs that are a little more challenging. So then in that case, we need adult only homes, maybe with no other pets, maybe with pets if it's a fearful dog, you know. So same thing with adult cats. We have some cats that are a little bit difficult and we're not going to put them in a home with a kid. But if we have kittens, we do want them in a home with a kid. So they're used to, you know, the sounds and the movements of children and stuff like that. So a lot, if you're talking puppies and kittens, it's a nice short commitment. We have our puppy and kitten fosters love it because it's never like, oh, how are we going to adopt out this puppy? You're going to be saddled with it for 6 months. You know, it's a short commitment, but some of the other ones, the medical ones and the behavior ones, are a little longer, but you know, we take care of the medical, the food, you know, we still have custody of the dog, so to speak, but and the cat, but we provide behavior support. We provide the support of the supplies and, you know, just kind of work with you to figure out what that animal needs based on what they're seeing in the home. Like, we look to the foster to be like, what do you think? What do you think this animal needs for an environment?
Yeah. So that's fostering. How does adoption of a pet with BayPath work? Obviously, you know, you want to meet the pet.
Yeah.
How long does that generally take? And you know, when can, you know, if I came in today, when could I take a pet home?
Yeah. So the pre-pandemic, it was, you know, pop in, you know, we were open 6 days a week, come on down, you know, call if you have questions, but also pop down, meet some of the animals, talk with the staff, and they try to match you based on, you know, what you're looking for as much as what, and what we know of the animal. You know, with the pandemic, it's become a kind of more protracted adventure where, you know, the application's online. And then we have, you know, matchmaking call. We use video and pictures. This is interesting. Like the whole dog thing has kind of been the same because we've always, you know, we've always been here in New England and we've always had a tight space. So if you're looking at a dog in December, like, you got to bundle up because we don't really have mm-hmm. the side space to meet the dog. So that's kind of been the same thing. But the difference is you can't come in and like, we can't have people in the building still. So we'll have people come in for an appointment to meet a specific dog or two based on, you know, whatever sounds like a match. Cats, this is interesting. Cats, we can't facilitate people meeting cats before they take them. So just because our building is like,
can't meet outside.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, you can't have the cat outside. So they pull up and we bring them the cat and they get to meet the cat back at home essentially. But I got to tell you, Mark, it's worked out very well because, you know, there's no, like, you know, when you come into a shelter, I mean, I've done it myself. Like, I've seen an animal that looked like an animal I used to have and be like, oh, you know, that looked like Skippy and I'm in love with that one. Mm-hmm. Not knowing if that is even the right fit for you, you know? And so it's taken a little bit of that emotion out of it. And so the people, the staff and the people looking for an animal have this process that's like separate from looking at animals. And it's just like, what are you looking for in your life? Like, what are you looking for? You want a pet that's going to enhance your life. Like, what would that look like in your mind? And then we'll go with what we know about what we have and we'll set you up with one. And returns, you know, people talk about like during the pandemic, have returns gone up? Like, no, they've gone down. They've gone down during a pandemic when you can't even meet the cat. But I think that's a testament to the staff and the people being open to our process of just like, trust us, you know, tell us what you want and we're going to try to find you, you know, the best fit. And it's worked. I'm miraculous.
Yeah. I would imagine that people have a bit more time.
Yes. Yes.
To spend with a cat or a dog and you know, hopefully that will kind of continue to be the case even as we get out of COVID. It's great to see the joy that comes from having a pet and you know, you're certainly facilitating that. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back with Elizabeth Jeffress of BayPath Humane Society of Hopkinton. We'll talk about what it was like during COVID, what she envisions happening as COVID eases, and we'll look to the future for BayPath Humane Society of Hopkinton when we come back. So stay tuned. We are back with Elizabeth Jeffress. So I was introduced to BayPath when my daughter was a Girl Scout and we volunteered there. You mentioned volunteers as being a key part of the mission. Can you tell me how important they are to you.
Oh my God, they're everything. Yeah, we have probably right now, probably about 100, you know, weekly volunteers. They help us with dog walking and enrichment, cleaning, cat socialization. But we also have volunteers that help us do some of the administrative work, take photos, take videos, help us with, you know, outreach opportunities. So they're helping us in like every facet of the organization. We love like the college kids that come back in the summer. They're excellent. And a lot of people have been with us for, you know, over a decade as well. So a lot of different skill sets, some people that have training or behavior experience coming on site and helping us, like, you know, evolve our programs and whatnot. They serve as some of the ones that have been there longer, serve as mentors and are part of our onboarding process for other volunteers, because the staff is, you know, running around doing, you know, a lot. And so these volunteers help us onboard other volunteers. And it's just great. I don't know what we'd do without them. And a lot of them hung in throughout the pandemic, which was, you know, incredible and complied with all the safety regulations and everything. So they made it possible for us to keep helping the animals during that time.
What has the pandemic been like for Bay Path? How have you fared?
We've done pretty well. I mean, people have been very generous. The donations have been good. We haven't been able to, you know, we had to cancel our largest fundraiser twice. We were able to go online with an auction twice. We did our 5K online, which was successful, but canceled the golf tournament twice. So the fundraising events took a little bit of hit, which, you know, it's fun to like get together with a lot of animal loving people. So that can't happen right now. But, you know, the staff has been, you know, safe. We put in safety protocols for the staff volunteers. The public, when they were coming for adoptions, they got guidelines about keeping a mask on, short periods of time, you know, the whole rundown. And everyone's been great about complying, which has made the whole thing work. No shortage of animals in need. Not wildly more than usual, though, because there's just always life events happening to people and animals needing to come in. So, yeah.
So I said at the start of our discussion that Bay Path is one of many organizations that make this area a great place to live. And to me, organizations like your own are critical to the overall health of a society. The way we treat animals is an indication of a society I want to live in, right? Mm-hmm. And now that we're seeing the end of COVID on the horizon, how do you envision the future of Bay Path in central Massachusetts?
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, a week before the Charlie Baker did the shutdown last March, we had like a 5-year process culminate in a town meeting in the town of Hopkinton, where we were awarded, after 5 years of town meetings and committees, we were awarded a parcel of land based on 166-page RFP we submitted to the town. We were awarded 5 to 7 acres for as much as 50 years, contingent upon lease negotiation. We currently don't own the land that we're on. We're not at risk of being, you know, removed from it, but it's not a good long-term plan. So we've been working with the town to leverage our relationship with them and our animal control contract. We serve the town as the animal control holding facility so that, you know, to see if we could get a piece of land and then run a capital campaign. So that's what we thought we'd be doing right now, but, you know, the little pandemic got in the way, but we plan to resume that. We've already begun re-upped our lease negotiations with the town of Hopkinton for that 50-year lease. So we're trying to ensure that we will be in the community for at least another 50 years. Like I said, we will have to run a capital campaign. And the whole plan for the future is around being a community resource. Pet overpopulation is not what it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. That's not really the future. It's more about helping people keep pets, helping people have access to training and behavior resources, volunteerism, behavior, addressing behavior training, food pantry. We partner with a food pantry currently, but, you know, being a community resource more than just an adoption center, if that makes sense.
So where is this land? Is this land where you are now, or is it in a separate location?
Yeah, it's interesting. Early back in the beginning, when I referenced where the dogs were housed like 40 years ago on Fruit Street Sand Pit, is exactly where we're going back to, ironically enough.
Oh.
So, but we'll be coming back with a state-of-the-art building instead of kennels with tarps on them.
And tell the listeners where you're located. You're off Route 85.
Yeah, right? We're off 85. We haven't moved, but our street used to be called Rafferty Road. It's now, we're 5 Rafferty Road. Then they built a big development up the street and they changed the name to Legacy Farms North. And so we're at 500 Legacy Farms North. We're right off 85 by the Hopkinton State Park. And it's a nice, you know, it's a nice piece of land. It's, there's woods. We have nice trails to walk on. No one bothers us, but we just, you know, the building's old. It's dated. It's, you know.
Hopkinton State Park is one of my favorite places to take my dog. It's just a wonderful place to walk.
Absolutely.
I want you to give a good promo at the end, you know, if someone wants to adopt a pet and all that. But before we do that, I want to learn about your pets. Tell me about your dogs and your menagerie.
I've always had a lot of shelter animals, and I tend to take the ones that are a little tougher. So that bio needs updating. I do have two cats. I have two senior cats. One has a chronic upper respiratory. One has thyroid. I did. My parrot just recently passed away. He was fabulous. He had a fabulous life. And that's the perspective. I'm very grateful for being in this industry because I do have this perspective that I can look at the animals that and feel really good about their quality of life. And I, unfortunately, you know, I'm far too aware of many who don't. So, you know, I can look back and feel good about that. And I now have three dogs. I do have the famous pigeon. She, the little snore on my lap, pit mix from Alabama, and my little pigeon there, who is another pit bull mix. She's deaf. She was returned to Bay Path 5 times for high arousal. They didn't think she was good with dogs. They didn't think she had separation anxiety. And Mark, she is an incredible dog. I can foster. She was great with the parrot. She's great with all the dogs I fostered. She's great with kids. And I don't take that lightly. I don't mess around with children, you know, in terms of like playing, you know, if with a dog, I don't think is, she's the most stable dog I've ever had. So she's incredible. But everyone's a foster fail. You know, I bring them in, and I have fostered a lot, but these guys just stay on. I've never had the opportunity to go to a shelter and pick out a pet, Mark. They just kind of,
they land right with you.
I'll take you. Whatever. Come on.
That's great. So if someone wants to adopt a pet, can you tell us the website, your phone number, all that?
Definitely. Thanks. www.baypathhumane.org. And the phone number is 508-435-6938. And yeah, right now we're asking people to go, you know, keep an eye on the website, and each memo has like who to contact. Usually it's our adopt@baypathhumane.org, but it's in there. Sometimes it's directly to a foster because they may have the best information, but we're real clear in each bio, like how to proceed. And then we send you kind of the rundown. We're really big. We said early on in the pandemic, we are going to manage expectations. None of us have any control of anything, but we are going to make sure people know exactly where they stand. And we've had people who didn't end up getting the dog they wanted or the cat, but they like reached out to just thank us for a process where they got responses timely. And so, you know, we're really good about that. So, you know, if you see an animal, reach out to us. You will absolutely hear from us, and we will give you all the information we know.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Venture Forum, Liz. This was a very enlightening discussion. I think a very important discussion.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate it.
I'm Mark Reed Edwards. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Venture Forum from WICN in Worcester. Join us next week as we continue to share tales of entrepreneurship from Central Massachusetts.